Hello, hello, hello. It's Labrish time. Getting in the groove here. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Margaret Marshall, your host on Backyard Labrish. We hope you're enjoying this beautiful spring weather, getting ready for summer. And I just want to welcome all our callers online, our callers on the phone, and our listeners online. And I understand I have to start announcing the dates. So when people check on the archives, they can remember when we're talking about and what we're talking about. So today's Wednesday, May 20th, and it's the year 2009. So again, welcome to the backyard. I hope you are sitting in your favorite chair and just feeling the trade winds blow across your face as you remember the beautiful island of Jamaica. For those of you who haven't been there, we hope that after the show you'll want to get on a plane or a boat to get over there and know what we're talking about. So I see we have a few callers online already. I'd like to welcome 631 and 718, and our board is lighting up, and we are continuing our tour of the island. Our theme is Discover Jamaica One Parish at a Time. And so far, we are in our fifth week. We have done Kingston, St. Thomas, St. Mary, Portland. And today, we're doing the beautiful parish of St. Anne. And I'm hoping that there'll be some St. Anne callers to help us to celebrate this Garden Parish. You know, going up in Jamaica, I remembered it as being the Garden Parish. Well, we have lots of news to share with you tonight about St. Anne. And I want to remind our listeners online calling in that if you'd like to interact with me, I'd love to hear from you. Just hit one on your telephone and I will see your raised hand and I will open up the mic to you. So, again, welcome, and today it's the most beautiful parish as it's described in some of the research that I've done, one of the most beautiful parishes. But I learned some things that I didn't even necessarily remember, you know. For those of you who may be new, this is the senior, and part of the reason I'm doing all of this is just to rekindle my memories of my homeland. I've been away a long time, and I am an American citizen now, and I don't think I'm going back to Jamaica to live. I have no plans, but just reminiscing about the beautiful place I grew up and getting in touch with my roots and learning some new things I didn't know before, and remembering some things that I learned when I was growing up is just very inspiring to me. And I hope that our listeners feel the same way and you will continue to join us. So I'm going to read you a little bit about what is on the promo that we're going to be discussing in more details today. But St. Anne is actually listed as the largest and most beautiful and the most historic. Well, if you think of just the discovery of Jamaica on a whole, and the fact that that is the parish that Christopher Columbus landed in 1494, then I would say that it is very historic. And in a way, I personally am sort of glad that Christopher Columbus discovered Jamaica then, because then I happened to be born there, and I just think I was very privileged to be born on that beautiful island. So, I did not know, perhaps some of our listeners might have known, that not only did Columbus discover Jamaica in 1494, but he was sort of marooned there for a year, right in St. Anne, between 1503 and 1504. He returned to Jamaica, and something happened where he couldn't leave. So it's the longest that this explorer had ever spent in any one place, because I suppose just like a lot of people who are discovering things and places, you don't stay in any one place for too long because you're on to your next discovery. So he stayed there for 1 year, and he had never stayed any place else in the New World that long. I'm sure he had a great time, because the place must have even been more beautiful at that time, because a lot of things have happened. We've been ravished by hurricanes and earthquakes and all different things. But I can just imagine what it might have been when it was in its pristine state when he discovered it. Anyway, another interesting fact that I found out, that it is considered to be one of the oldest populated areas in the island, I mean St. Anne itself, because they can trace back the existence of Arawaks in 600 to 650 A.D. I mean, that is unbelievable. And it is also the earliest settlement in Jamaica of any European settlements in the Americas. So that was the first. So it really does have a lot of history. And interestingly enough, it was the first place that an African or Africans landed was in St. Anne. Only at that time, the first Africans that landed there were not really considered slaves at the time. They were considered bodyguards or body servants, as they call them. I suppose they took care of the personal people, so they call them body servants to the Spaniards. So that's something I just discovered. I didn't remember learning that in school. Anyway, besides all of the old history, there's quite a few historic people that were from there or were born there. Marcus Garvey being one of them, and a lot of us know about him, but also Bob Marley and a couple of about three other reggae singers. I'm not too familiar with the new stars in music. Of course, everyone knows Bob Marley, but there is two more reggae singers that were mentioned here, and some of our listeners might be familiar with them. One is Burning Spear, and the other one is Floyd Lloyd. Oh, that's a neat name, Floyd Lloyd. So we have a couple of, and these people are known worldwide in the music world, and of course, historically, a lot of people are familiar with Marcus Garvey's work. And he happens to be one of Jamaica's seven national heroes. So that's some history about that. Now, and please raise your hands, callers, if you'd like to help me out here with any information or correct me on any of my findings. I see a raised hand, so I'm going to open up the mic to 718, and I want to tell our listeners again that this is a Labrish So a lavish is when several people are engaged in conversation. So let me see. Welcome 718-379. This is Margaret on the lavish. Who am I speaking with?
Lay in the Bronx, the home of the New York Yankees.
Thank you very much, sir. I won't talk about my team, but welcome to the backyard. Are you in your favorite chair?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So I hope you can feel the cool breeze and you can picture yourself in St. Anne.
You bet.
I know you're not from there.
But no, but I visited St. Anne.
You're right.
Quite often.
And I'm sure you know that it is or was considered the Garden Parish.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know that has been or is changing? And we'll talk about that later on as to what's happening in agriculture and farming and things like that. Because, you know, like the rest of the world, I suppose there's some drastic changes taking place all over,
yeah,
including St. Anne.
And, the St. Anne may claim that they're the largest parish, but it may not be true.
Well, I noticed that on Wikipedia.
Yeah, but it's all according to who is measuring, you know.
Right. So who's claiming that they are bigger?
Well, St. Elizabeth and some other place, I think St. Catherine as well.
Right, okay.
But I just wanted to take issue with the 1494 that you mentioned. I always thought it was 1492.
Oh, well, Wikipedia has it as 1494.
Well,
he landed.
I'm going to call them up because I think that is not right.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's 1492 because Columbus came to Jamaica before any of the other islands.
Uh-huh.
And there is a little saying that would highlight that, but I don't think I can say it on the air.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, in 1492, what Columbus had to do. See?
Oh, I got you. All right. Okay.
But anyway, I just take issue with that, and I'm going to verify that for another broadcast, whether it's 1492 or 1494.
Right, and as I understand from visiting Wikipedia, is that it's always open to correction.
Oh, yes. I mean, we're glad that our little island is on there in the first place.
Right. And it's things like this that can cause, you know, the right information to be, because most people might read it and not really take issue with it or want to address it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good thing. And were you familiar with the stay between 1503 and 1504?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, you were. Yeah. So you were, I know that you are a history buff. So whereas I might have read it while I was in school, I'm sure it didn't register.
And, you know, Jamaica was like, St. Anne's was like a home base for Columbus because from there he would go to other islands,
mm-hmm.
You know, soon after he landed there, he went to other West Indian islands, and then he would go back again, but he would always come back to Jamaica.
Well, of course, because I'm sure it was the most beautiful.
And the resources in Jamaica at the time prompted that, because St. Anne's is relatively flat on the coastal plains, and sugar was a big thing all along the north coast, right up to Trelawney. So this was a big resource to take back or to ship out of the island.
Right. But I have a trivia for you. Do you know what it was called before it was called St. Anne's?
I thought I knew that. I happen to know when it was called St. Anne's because of the a tribute to the first governor's wife.
Right, right.
Prior to that, let me see.
This was what Columbus called it.
St. Anne was named after Lady Hyde, who was the first governor's wife. Well, actually, she was the wife of a king, King James II. And her name was Lady Anne Hyde, and Lady Anne thus became they named it after her, so to speak. But there's a little niche in there. I'm trying to remember asked me the name of the prior to that, you know.
He called it, Columbus himself called St. Anne's Bay Santa Gloria.
Yes, that's correct. That's what I wanted to remember.
Right, Santa Gloria is what he called it.
Correct.
But did you know about the Arawak existence from 600 to 650 A.D.?
Yeah, not only the Arawaks, but the Taino.
Yeah, Taino and the Arawaks.
Arawaks,
yes.
They even preceded the Arawaks.
Uh-huh.
Back in, you mentioned the dates, what it was, A.D. And that is astounding because, I mean, I thought there were only camels and iguanas there at that time.
Right, right. It's amazing. I didn't know that too. When I saw that date, I mean, that floored me.
Yeah, but this is what's good about this. It brings up things that you might not have known unless you went digging or somebody did some research and you find out all these good things about.
Right, right. And I mean, the more I find out, is the more fascinated I get. I also have some findings of Dr. Joy Lumsden because she responded to, you know, I always send her the upcoming show.
Oh, yes.
And whenever she has something that she thinks would contribute to the information, she would send it back to me. So she's just a wonderful resource, and I really want to just celebrate her every chance I get, because for our listeners who might not know, Dr. Joy Lumsden is now a resident, and I'm sure she calls herself possibly a Jamaican, but was born in London, in England, I'm not sure what part, and married a Jamaican that they met at college, and her first child was born in England, and then she moved to Jamaica and has lived there, and is still living there.
2 years.
Oh, yes. She's in my category of a senior, and she is just relentless in her research. And a lot of times not much to work with, but, you know, something in a journal in England and something that she found in an old archives of the Jamaican newspaper or in somebody's library or in a book. And she's just able to piece things together. So as Jamaicans, we really owe her a lot. And she's very passionate about her work, so she's constantly upgrading her pages and her research. Not only that, she is also reaching out to anyone who has any information that can help her as she, you know, stumble on things, that they might know of some place that she can get some information, or they themselves might have some information to add to what she's found. So if you just Google Dr. Joy Lumsden, you'll get to her various websites. And she does have several of them that she puts on the net, and the information is open to everyone.
Now last week you did, I think it was St. Mary's, right?
Right.
And St. Mary's, you mentioned, was one of the poorer parishes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And by contrast, St. Anne's is just the opposite.
Right.
only well, because they have some real involved resources, which you're probably going to talk about.
Right. And as I do some of this digging up, I'm wondering if the terrain, you know, just the geography of the parish itself, plus the soil condition of the parish, because now I'm learning that the soil is not the same way all over the island.
Oh yeah, that we covered in geography class back home, because
right. So and that can affect what grows and how well it grows and how much of it grows.
Most definitely. A lot of the rivers disappear, and you wonder what happened to them. But it's the soil. For instance, Jamaican limestone soil is well known around the world. Australia, I think, has some semblance of what we have in Jamaica, the limestone. It's not very stable, and it's in fact it's porous.
Mm.
You know, so therefore. Today you have a good crop of something. Tomorrow you have a barren land. So that's how it works in that particular part of what has evolved over time is that you have more caves in that stretch of land.
Mm-hmm.
Than anywhere else around the island because of the limestone base.
Right. Speaking of caves, there are 59 caves in St. Anne.
That many?
59 caves and numerous sinkholes.
Yeah, sinkholes is another feature.
Right. Now, do you know the Manigue Lake, which varies considerably in size, is one of the few large intermittent lakes on the island. Were you familiar with that?
Oh, yes. When I was a cadet, when I was at St. George's, we had to go on a camp. Maneuver down to Manigue.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
when we went there, it was very, I mean, you're coming from Kingston where all you don't see much soil, you see asphalt.
Right.
In Manigue, you see that yellow clay turf, and it's always wet.
Yeah.
You know, and we, as a boy, I wondered about that, and I was told there was an underground river that was in Manigue. And, you know, you try to use your imagination a little bit. You can only see what you see.
Right.
Now,
well, you know, it comes up some places and then it's underground some places.
Yeah, but listen to this. I think it's 2-3 years ago that the river surfaced. And there was a huge lake. And historically, this has happened, you know, several times in the history. But this is in our time now, and I desperately wanted to go down because since I'd seen it when it was dry, I wanted to see the lake. But I haven't been there. Maybe it's dried up already. I don't know. I hope not. I still want to see it.
Yeah, but a lot of people in Jamaica. I don't know if they realize that, you know, we have rivers and we have just a few lakes.
Well, Jamaica.
The Manigue Lake happens to be the largest.
Right, and Jamaica has more water. We always learn that Jamaica has more water than a lot of other places in the world. And lots of rivers. So, you know, we should never. This was one of the phenomenon nuns that. I couldn't understand when I was a child that we never had enough
water.
Potable water, I should say.
Right.
And the reason for that is that they never harness the water that we have flowing all over the country.
Right. Now, the boundary between St. Anne and St. Mary is formed by the White River.
Okay.
White River is what sort of is the dividing line.
Mm.
And the other rivers are Dunn's River. Negro River, St. Anne's River, Great River, Roaring River. I've heard about that Roaring River. I remember that name. Cave and Pedro River. Well, I never heard of those. They might be small.
I'm going to switch phones, so I'll let you take over for a while.
Okay. Now, the products, they have a lot of agriculture that is raised there, mainly bananas, allspice, which we know as pimento. I suppose it's really since I migrated to America that I heard it called allspice, but I don't remember it being called allspice at home. We knew it pimento. Now, there's sugar, coconut, coffee, lime, corn, ginger, sweet potato, yams, and annatto. The soil is also suitable for citrus and sisal. And I'm wondering if there are any of our listeners that know what sisal was used for. And that is cultivated in drier areas. But sisal is what they use to make the hats, you know, the straw hats. I'm sure that's what it is, at least if my memory serves me well. And if any of our listeners know different, but I remember sisal, I remember going to visit the country parts where the ladies would be braiding that or making the things that make the hats. And they would put it together and weave it. Very interesting. And I'm sure it's called sisal. And I didn't even realize that, you know, I think I saw this mostly in St. Elizabeth, but it possibly grows all over the island or is transported all over the island. But St. Anne is one of the parishes that this is grown. It's also noted for cattle rearing. Horses and hogs and, I suppose, cows. Now, I found this quite sad. It says, however, agriculture has been on the decline as farmland is being used for housing and other developments, and the cultivated areas have decreased. So, in other words, it's losing its name as being our garden parish because it's really not producing as much of the food. When I thought of it as the garden parish when I was growing up, I could be wrong, but I always thought of it as providing most of what we consumed, what we ate, but perhaps it meant just from all the different species of plants or flowers that is there because we're going to be discussing a very important aspect. I'm sure that most Jamaicans are familiar with Fern Gully. And that happens to be in St. Anne. And Dr. Lumsden has done a lot of research. And there's a lot of people that are just curious about how Fern Gully came to be formed because it's so unique. And it has been attracting people interested in plants and ferns, you know, over the ages, long ago. And we're going to talk about some of those people as I go over my notes here. But I thought that it was interesting because we Jamaicans, who even before I left there, we know that most everybody in the country parts want to come one place to the city, which is Kingston. So the young people who might have grown up with their parents farming the land, you know, don't necessarily go into farming. They want to do something else. And that whatever their parents used to do or take care of dies. Or, it's not continued. And most of those places now are being turned into housing or some sort of factory or business. So we're losing a lot of the natural things that used to be grown at most of these places. So let me just talk a little bit more now about the attractions in St. Anne beside all its beauty, and we're going to really talk about Fern Gully in details, because I think most people not only have been through Fern Gully, I don't think when we used to travel back and forth there, we really realized how unique that area really was. However, there's Duns River Falls, that is, of course, a big tourist attraction. And as my loyal listener from the Bronx, home of the Yankees, would say that, you know, it's really why one of the reasons why there's a big difference between St. Anne and St. Mary, because St. Mary is considered one of the poorer parishes, when St. Anne does not have come in that category because of the tourism. Now, when you think of it, I'm sure that when the economy is bad like it is now, I'm sure tourism is down. So when you have a city or a parish that is totally dependent on any one way of producing income, let me open up back the mic to I see a raised hand here. Your mic is open, 646.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay. So I was just talking about the effects that the world economy can have on any place, but especially when you have one parish on an island that is heavily dependent on tourism, you know, for to keep them afloat. And I think that that's why it's really good to have a balance. But I don't know if you were listening when I mentioned that it is documented that agriculture has been on the decline in St. Anne because the land is being used for housing and other developments, and cultivated areas have really dramatically decreased. Were you aware of that, Leigh?
Yes, this is a fact, and even now in the downturn, they're still opening up housing developments, you know, upscale types. Some not on the beach, but let's say across the highway, the foothill sections of St. Anne, Runaway Bay. Ochoa's, the development in Ochoa's is unbelievable. It's like Coney Island, so to speak. It's got everything there. It's a mini New York in some respects.
Well, is the housing mainly for tourists, or is it?
Well, no, I just threw that in because it is part and parcel of what you're talking about, where the economy goes down because of the downturn, and the housing, a lot of the housing that were put up was to house tourists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people make not residents that you would live in on a permanent basis, but to rent. In fact, there is an organization that controls the housing for tourists. Let's say you want to bring your family down for a month or 2 weeks, or as the case may be, you go through this organization. And they provide you with the facility, but and in a downturn now, you see what's going to happen here, as you were alluding to.
But let me just tell you some things that you might not know about St. Anne, and that the first sugar mill was established by the Spaniards.
Right.
Do you know what year that was?
1526. 1526, yeah, that's about right.
Now, after 1655, when the English captured Jamaica, St. Anne's gradually developed as a fishing port with many warehouses and wharves. The parish of St. Anne was later named after, as you said, Lady Anne Hyde, the first wife of King James II of England. So you were right on target on that, Mr. History Man. And Outreas began to develop as a modern town and a favorite tourist destination in Jamaica.
Yeah, they had a built-in attraction there in the falls.
Right. I mean, this goes back from a long time. Its development commenced when Reynolds Jamaica Mines built a deep water pier west of the town to ship bauxite.
Ah, yes. Now, I'm glad you mentioned that because the bauxite helped the economy of St. Anne. But even before the tourism left, let's say, Montego Bay and came into sway in Outreas area, St. Anne.
Mm-hmm.
So bauxite is very prominent in the development of St. Anne as a richer parish.
I got you. Okay. So in other words, it had several things contributing to, you know, its wealth. It wasn't just one thing. It was the attraction from the tourist point of view, it being the first settlement. It was the first English settlement in the Americas. And there was a lot of people going in and out of there. I mean, from those days when they had those little boats. Well, they weren't little, but, you know, those boats that took a long time to get from one place to another. It's amazing. But anyway, it says here that I talked about it being named after the King James II.
Yeah.
And also that the parish, no, wait a minute. Here's where the dispute came in. You talked about St. Mary and Trelawney and St. Catherine.
Right.
It says here, it is bounded on the south by Clarendon, and St.
Catherine
in the east,
right,
and St. Mary and Trelawney in the west, as well as one parish, as with all, but one parish, its coast is washed by the Caribbean Sea. St. Anne covers an area, and it gives you the measurements here, making it the largest parish. So they're going by measurements, because St. Elizabeth is just a fraction. These are the numbers. 1.212.6. And St. Elizabeth is 1212.4. So
it's... Yeah, so it goes back to what I said. It depends on who is measuring.
Right. Well,
I mean, there's about three parishes that make that claim, you know.
According to this.
For now, we'll say St. Anne is the largest.
Well, it's just 2 points. It's 2 points over, bigger than St. Elizabeth.
Yeah, but forgetting about just measurements, if you think of economy and resources, then you might say that St. Anne is the largest.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because they have the bauxite and they have the tourism, and when those things are going full blast, nobody can catch them.
Right. I don't know if the bauxite is going full blast still, is
no,
it?
No, bauxite is down to the barest minimum now. The only thing that's left to tell you that it's bauxite is that red stuff. You better not wear a white sneaker in the area because it'll turn
It
red.
Will never come back to its original color.
Yeah, but the necessity for bauxite again reflects the downturn in building,
mm-hmm,
and the requirements for the basic ore, which is bauxite. And we now have competition from other places. And so it's a hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not what it used to be like in the 60s.
Not only that, I don't know if you've noticed some of the aluminum ads now, but they're recycling the aluminum foil now.
That's a very good point.
It. Yeah, but, so, you know.
Because bauxite is the ore for aluminum.
Right, right, right.
And if you're not using aluminum, then where is the business, you know?
Right. So I just want to tell for our listeners that are interested in history and might not know a lot about St. Anne, the parish of St. Anne, I want to just let them know that the towns are St. Anne's Bay, Discovery Bay, Brownstown, and Ocherius. I suppose those are the big towns. And I'm sure there are lots of little districts with some real neat names.
You might mention that Ocherius, one of those towns that you just mentioned, is a very huge cruise destination.
Right.
So even though there may be a downturn in tourism, you're still going to get four or five boats every 2 days coming in there.
Right. That's right. You know,
I should say ships, because boats are the ones that you mentioned, those little ones that used to come in the 1500s for Columbus. That's
mm-hmm.
boats. Ships are these.
Well, now they're coming in bigger numbers, but they're not staying as long. Now, these are some of the attractions. There's Dunn's River Falls, Green Grotto Caves. There's a marine park in Ocherius, and Shore Park Gardens. There's Portaseco Beach, River Rafting, and Dolphin Cove. Are you familiar with Dolphin Cove?
Yes.
Do we have dolphins there?
I haven't seen any, but that's what the caves, Dolphin Caves.
No, it says cove, C-O-V-E.
Coves is a synonym for caves.
Oh, I
cove,
see.
Yeah. Mm. So, but anyway, I remember going down to that area that you mentioned, the Portaseco Beach is a very big beach for the locals.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine all these tourists running around the place, and there's no place for the locals to swim.
Right.
This was one of the places. In fact, we used to go there on picnics from Kingston.
Name rings a bell.
This goes way back, and it was like appeasing the locals because. A lot of these hotels are private houses along the beaches, did not allow locals to swim, even
mm-hmm.
though that was against the law.
Right.
There was also, you probably didn't see that in your research, but polo is played in that area as well. The Runaway Bay, I forget the name of the place that is a big spot for polo players, and a lot of the locals, you know, people, the more influential and richer people play polo there, you know, along the coast.
Now, do you want to tell our listeners that might be new to or not quite familiar with Jamaica about Runaway Bay?
I'm sorry, I didn't get hear you.
About Runaway Bay?
Oh, yes, Runaway Bay. What was your question?
I said, do you want to tell them a little history about Runaway Bay? Was it called Runaway Bay before the rebellion and all of that, or was it named that after the some of the rebellion took place. What is significant about that? Something is coming to mind that I'm not quite.
I'm not remembering much about Runaway Bay myself, but I'm just going to make an assumption that Runaway Bay was after the rebellion.
That's what I thought. I thought reading something about the reason it's called Runaway Bay.
Yeah. I'll have to do a little more research on the reason why it was called Runaway Bay. But Runaway Bay is another area that is quite very big in the tourist industry, and a lot of doctors, local doctors and lawyers, chose to live in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And they benefit from the hotels. You know, some of these hotels you have to certify for scuba diving and deep sea diving and all of this stuff. You have to see a local doctor and pay him a fee of $25 US.
Oh, really?
Before you can sign up for certification. This is before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if he says you can't go, you can't go.
Mm.
But first, you got to have the $25 US to pay him.
Right. Well, I'm sure that don't apply to the locals. But
this is a problem
if they have too many people that are not really medically fit to do that. And they go, you know, it would be, and they do, and anything happen, it would be bad publicity for the area. So I can reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I want to talk a little bit about Fern Gully.
Yes, you were. I'm interested too in that.
When I mentioned that, or when Dr. Lumsden got the promo about what we were doing this week, then she sent me some information on her findings.
Let's hear it.
And I am fiddling with my computer here to get it because some of it, you know, I'm unable to print.
Well, you know, just before if you find it, Fern Gully goes back in history away. I mean, we were proud of Fern Gully for a long time as children.
Mm-hmm.
And Fern Gully has been wiped out many times by flooding,
mm-hmm,
and hurricanes and all of that. They, over the years, they have, if you can believe this, widened Fern Gully to the extent that two cars can pass at the same time, you know, in almost any part of the route.
Uh-huh.
So they've done quite a bit of refurbishing last year.
Well, I would call that not necessarily refurbishing, but construction, because according to Dr. Lumsden's findings, in the early days, it was just a footpath.
Well,
I'm sure that the rocks and things perhaps came up a lot closer. So over the years, they might have taken down some of the original, how it was originally. Because Alex Hawkes wrote a report in 1970. I don't know who he is, but it's on Dr. Lumsden's pages. And he said that he believes that he's sure that it has long been considered that Fern Gully was once a series of cascading falls, tumbling downwards to the sea and bringing the needed soil upon which the present community of Ocherius is built. So he's thinking that it was even bigger than it was. and that it was, because of over time, the dirt, I suppose, coming down, that actually formed or allowed Ocheras to be something they could build on, actually put structures on, because it was really just so rural. But he talked about it as being one of Jamaica's prime show places. And I believe that almost all authorities now agree that the town's name is a corruption of the Spanish Las, Chorreras. How do you say that, Lay?
Carreras?
Yeah, which signifies, that means the cascades or waterfalls, rather than eight rivers, which is the translation of the contemporary. He feels that the true meaning of what it was called, it means the cascades or waterfalls, but it was a misinterpretation, and it was called Eight Rivers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really hard to come up with a plausible explanation. That's a good explanation. But the reason I'm saying that is, if you go back and think about the kind of soil, the alluvial limestone soil that we're dealing with,
mm-hmm.
which would be subject to changes over time, unbelievable changes. Because
right.
Don't forget, if you have a river running through it today, then you get a sinkhole. Where did the river go? And
right.
then the sinkhole developed a cave, or here comes Fern Gully now. You know, it never existed before.
Right.
So
okay.
You never know, you know. But we'll accept that.
Well, that's just one. I mean, Dr. Lumsden has several, written information of descriptions from people who traveled there, you know, of course. Foreigners.
If let's say your great-grandfather went through Fern Gully, he might have seen something a lot different than
your
grandfather and then you know,
uh-huh.
over time. So,
right. You know, there was a map published in 1900, a pamphlet which was entitled A Happy Month in Jamaica, and it was produced by the United Fruit Company to attract tourists to the island.
Mm.
Now, Dr. Lumsden says she's still trying to get a copy of it, but it was titled A Tourist Map of the Island of Jamaica, and that caption was A Happy Month in Jamaica. And it described, and we're talking about 1900 that was published. This is the first map I have found which names Fern Gully and shows the road through it. The map is intended specially for cyclists who would certainly have appreciated the information on roads and places where the map included. So my point is that for it to be able to accommodate two cars now, it came originally just from a track that cyclists could ride on.
Yeah.
You know, and she says possibly Fern Gully started out with an underground river flowing through the caves,
mm-hmm.
the roofs of which later collapsed. Some have suggested that it was created in 1760 by a flash flood, but do not seem to indicate the source of this information. Edward Long, in his History of Jamaica in 1774, wrote about this, you know, near Ocheras, as it is now more commonly called. It says in the parish, the road of St. Mary baffles through Walter's plantation on the westward up a steep hill, and then he goes on to describe what was possibly Fern Gully. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Well,
and the skeleton of an Indian was laid bare to view about 5 feet above the surface.
Right. Well, I mean, it goes back to what I just said. I mean, even in our time, there was a hurricane, I would say maybe 10 years ago, I forget the names of these hurricanes, and they had to close the Farangola down because it was, like, flooded.
Right, right, right. But you can imagine, this man was writing about this in 1774. My goodness. So it's amazing just to even in your whole, to wrap your mind around what the conditions were like, you know, for travel in those times when there were no roads.
Well, you really have to tax your imagination when you start to talk about this place, St. Anne, being inhabited by those Indians in, what was that, 600 AD?
That's right.
It's hard to believe then in the 1500s, here comes Columbus. The first Spanish governor was there in 1526.
Right.
You know, and then 1655, the English took it over. I mean, this is 2009, the 21st century. I mean, you know, this is a big expanse of time to try to imagine.
Right, right, right. And in 1785, the House of Assembly authorized expenditure on altering and completing the road from Manid to Otrias. So, you know, even during those times, at least they started to do something. So I suppose it's a work in progress.
Consider this. Since that time, we now have a highway coming from that Manig area into Otrias. You know?
And just listen to something here. It was called the Gully Road. Dr. Lumsden is still trying to find out when the ferns were really talked about. You know, we're not sure if they were there originally or somebody planted them or who planted them. But there was it was referred to as the Gully Road in a 29 year in the West Indies and Central Africa, a review of missionary work and adventure that was published in 1829, between 1829 and 1858, by a Reverend Hope Martheton, Waddell, Waddell. He was a famous Presbyterian missionary in Jamaica and West Africa. And in an account of his travels in 1837, he wrote, you know, about passing through the Gully Road and about the notable vegetation and how, you know, it was gloomy and lonely.
All right. Funny you should say that, because I just wrote down, I won't forget it. When I go through Fern Gully, I think of rainforest.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
Only because that in a rainforest, it's always gloomy. The terrain is always wet. A thing like ferns would thrive in a rainforest.
Oh yes, you know? They love that.
Having gone to rainforests in Panama and Costa Rica, you get the idea that there's a little niche in Jamaica, Fern Gully area there, that would qualify as a rainforest. It's not large enough to be a forest, but the concept, you know.
Right, right, right. But, you know, it's really interesting to read how the writers, when anybody that was writing about anything described it, you know, how they would describe it. You remember how people used to perhaps talk in the old English, you know, when they any narration was sort of weird, and they are different, not really weird, but they would write, you know, how they describe. It's very interesting, at least to me, to see the words they would use to describe what they saw.
Yeah.
And it's just I'm just so intrigued to know that the things that we took for granted in some cases when we were growing up, you know, the history it had before it. You know, how many people might have marveled because you had artists and writers. Jamaica was a very famous place, and it attracted, you know, people from that time to come and check things out. There is a story, or she has done some research, about an artist, a female artist, who was very attached to her dad, I think, and after he died, she decided to tour the world. And her passion was in writing about or painting, you know, exotic plants and things that was not she was not exposed to in her early days. So I don't know how Dr. Lumsden, being a researcher, find all these things. But anyway, there's something she has here, which is the Recollections of a Happy Life. And this was written in 1894. And this is written by somebody's stay in Jamaica. I think it's the same artist, her stay in Jamaica in 1871. I am solely tempted to take a small vacant house there called Eden Bower, B-O-W-E-R, for £3 a month, with endless coconuts and grass for the horses, and enough allspice to pay my rent.
And enough what?
At allspice, which I suppose
pimento,
yes. And then in parenthesis, she have fever also is plenty.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose she was talking about just the from the mosquitoes or something. And she goes on to say, prudence, however, drove me back to the civilized side of the island over the Mont Diablo, ascending to the very ferniest gully I ever saw, where the banana leaves were absolutely unbroken by any wind. We came to a kind of alpine scenery, a wide, waving tableland of grass with trees dotted about it. Orange, allspice, and different timber trees hung with orchids, but not in flower. Isn't that something? This is some letter.
Sounds like a European in wonder.
Right, right, right. I mean, where in Europe they're going to have, you know, that kind of scene?
No place.
Yeah. And then another famous Italian writer and correspondent for the Times of London visited the island and wrote The Pearl of the Antilles in 1873 of riding up the famous Gully Road. You know, she's researching people to find out when did the name change, you know, from Gully Road, or how was it described in the early years? And it really was never described as Fern Gully.
Right.
Now, in 1883, Mariana was the woman's, the artist's name. Her North is her last name. Mariana North's friend, Lady Brassey, wrote to her in her journal of her short stay in Jamaica. She wrote in glowing terms of her family's drive through the moonlit Gully Road. She and her husband and children were on one of numerous cruises on their ship, the Sunbeam, and she has a picture of the Sunbeam. Certainly from her description, the Gully Road already deserved the Fern Gully title, which it was to assume in about 10 years later. And so it was not called Fern Gully originally, apparently, but the people who, you know, walked through it and saw it and marveled about it always referred to it as the Gully Road. Is that interesting?
Well,
so,
it might very well be that the Jamaican derivation emerged, and we call it because it has A lot of different, umpteen varieties of fern there. We call it fern gully.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were actually, well, there's a dispute as to who planted them.
Yeah,
but,
well, that's an ongoing thing from way back.
Right.
What we were aware of is that the varieties of fern that you would see there, you wouldn't see almost anywhere else in the world.
That's true. Yeah, there's been some writing about that, though. But here's an interesting tidbit. Did you know that in 1916, between 1915 and 1916, a feature film was made in St. Anne? It was called The Daughter of the Gods. And it was shot in Jamaica by Fox Film Corporation. And one of the main location was Fort Augusta. Isn't that something? Well, you know, the towns had different names in those days.
Yeah, but that's something, information that I never heard of.
No, I never heard of it either. And she says here that the film was a 10 reel black and white film from the silent era days, and it's lost since no copy is known to exist, although one reel is believed to be present in, guess where?
Guess
where it is believed to be?
Institute?
In Russia.
In Russia?
Uh-huh, in the Russian archives.
Sounds like a stretch.
No, listen to this. The movie is said to have cost about $1 million U.S. dollars to produce. And the spearhead, William Fox, was allegedly so incensed that he removed the producer's name from the credit list. The producer's name was Brennon, Brennan sued and won. But,
well, 1917 for a movie, black and white movie, costing that much money was a heck of a movie.
Well, I suppose it's because of the travel and all. You can imagine what it was like in those days. But the movie was to have might have had 500 of it was about the goons, G-N-O-M-E-S, Goomies, G-N-O-M-E-S, the parade of the Goomies. 500 of
Gnomes.
You know, the print is sort of bad because she's getting things here and getting things there and putting them together. Anyway, the film crew arrived in 1915, and the following suggestion was made for the use of Fern Gully as a location. So Fern Gully was on the program for some of the scenes. Now, because there's no copy of the known copy of the film, you know, I suppose they don't know for sure if it was part of the scene, but it was certainly on the program and published in the Daily Gleaner of December 20th, 1915, as having the scene with 500 little donkeys led by the Dream Girl, who they gave the name of the star. She was the star of the show. And they will be shown riding up the gully. And that was Fern Gully they were talking
about.
That must
have been an extravaganza.
Well, this is what I mean, 500 donkeys. I mean, who would believe that in 1916 some of these things were going on in Jamaica? It's almost unbelievable. You know, my mother was born 1912.
You can't dispute it, but it's hard to believe.
Well, you can see why it would cost $1 billion.
Yeah.
Which was a lot in those days, but it was called Daughter of the Gods.
Mm.
So that I thought that was a very interesting tidbit, because I think I mentioned something when we were doing the Pang Sisters, which was something that was brought to my attention by Dr. Joy Lumsden, research of balaclava, that one of them had starred in a movie with Orson Welles. Remember that play?
Yeah, I remember.
So a lot of those things were going on. You know, we're talking about 1916 and 1912 and times like that, when I'm sure a lot of Jamaicans were not familiar with that at all. I know I wasn't. But we have been rattling along, and I've forgotten to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. We're here every Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and our whole existence is to celebrate and reminisce and help to restore and recover our wonderful memory of our homeland, and to find out some new things and labrish about things that, especially for the people who are interested in history, we have so much to be proud of, Leigh, and we have so much.
Does anyone have any time yet to jump in if they came from or have any experience in that?
I see that there are some people online, and I'd like to ask you to call us. I'm not able to do the online chat, so if you would call us from on the phone if you want to interact with us, and I'll give you the telephone number. It's 718-766-4558, and again, we're here each week at 8 o'clock. We're doing a series called Discover Jamaica One Parish at a Time. We're on our fifth parish. And next week, I think we'll be doing St. Andrew, which will complete that quadrant of the island, you know, Leigh, if you look on the map. And quite a few people, because Kingston was always merged with St. Andrew, as in KSAC, don't think of St. Andrew as a parish by itself. Am I not correct?
No, you're correct. It's really technically not.
It is. It's considered one of the parishes.
Well, with I thought the merger of what you mentioned, KSAC, made it part of Kingston.
Well, that was just for political reasons. But it is still considered its own parish.
Okay.
And part of the 14.
Mm.
That's what makes the difference. They just merged the governments together. Or I don't know if I don't think they have their own mayor and all of that in St. Andrew, but I know that I grew up thinking it was one thing.
That's a very point there. The mayor in that merger, I think, governs both
Kingston and St. Andrew.
Kingston and St. Andrew.
Right.
That's the whole idea behind the KSAC.
Uh-huh. But in terms of a parish by itself, it's considered its own parish.
Okay.
So next week we'll be doing St. Andrew, and that will complete that little part of the, you know, how if you look on the map, we will be now finished with that quarter.
You covered a lot of ground there.
Oh, yes, 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 and we still have a lot to go. And each parish, I am really intrigued because each parish has its own special, you know, history and special things that happened or, you know, that people might not be aware of.
I
am just tickled pink.
You ready for just a little quick experience?
Sure.
I stayed at a hotel in St. Anne's when it was called Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And a girl that had, this is going to sound very funny, but part of the deal in the hotel, all inclusive, you get your nails done and
mani pedi.
They primp you up.
Right.
Well, the girl that did it invited me to go up into the hills of St. Anna. I had never been to that part of the country, the interior.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've been to the hotels, but what's that, you know? So I went, and I was amazed. This girl's father and mother, they were teachers. They had a school up in the hills. There were 400 children, and the children were so spick and span in their white.
This was a private school?
I doubt that it was a private school. It must have been But a teacher in the country, we will find that a teacher is a big guy, big
person
in those areas, you know. And this, and these people, and this girl, she was the smartest thing on, only to find out that two parents were teachers. And
until
this day, I'm in touch with a girl. She's now in London, and very industrious, very smart, and but it was an experience going up into those hills,
right,
and finding a community, and also a big school.
Do you remember the name of the district?
I can't remember the name of the district, but it's, you know, one of these towns that you would never know it was there unless you went.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I will remember that forever.
All right. Well, you know, sometimes that's how I felt when I went to Madrid. You know, just staying in somebody's, in a bed and breakfast is a totally different flavor from staying in a hotel.
Of course, yeah.
You know, because you get to see how the natives live and a little more about their customs, just even though you were a Jamaican. And I just want to mention that as we're on the air, and, you know, the show is lots of foreigners really check out the show too. But for the people who are Jamaicans, you know that even though we were born and raised there, most of us, we don't really know every parish and know what the interior part of the parish. If you even go and stay in a district within a parish, usually you don't go around the whole parish. Am I not correct?
That's true.
You know, you're more or less in the general area of where whoever you are visiting. So there's still a lot of things about the country parts that you just really don't know. I'm discovering so much that I didn't know before.
And you'll find that the people in the interior are much the same in their hospitality and their kindness and everything as they were earlier on, back in the, like when your mother was born.
Right,
that time,
right.
You know?
Now, and you're talking about how long ago you had this experience?
Oh, I would say about 9-10 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, I mean, it was a unique experience because I had been to several hotels, and, like, you know, I didn't get to, if it's all inclusive, not to go outside for much of anything.
Fair
and
fact.
I had the opportunity to go up in the hills of St. Anne's.
Mm-hmm.
And I really was grateful for that.
Now, when you say up in the hills, I mean, you were literally up in the hills, and did you have...
Up in the hills. In fact, if you don't have good brakes on your car, you run down the hill.
Ah, yeah.
You know, it's not much outside of Ocho Rios, but it goes... St. Anne's, it's like as you would exit a Foreign Gully and maybe go about 2 miles, and if you went left, you would go up into the hills.
In fact, there's
a route going through those same hills that I found later that could be an alternate route to if you were going, let's say, from St. Anne's to back to Kingston or to Mandeville. There's an alternate route that goes through the hills, you know. So and sometimes it's used, especially when the roads are blocked because of weather or hurricanes, whatever.
Right. Well, on a lighter note, now I want to talk. Do you know that there was another world famous Peter Cargill? Are you familiar with him?
Big name in Jamaica, yes.
Yeah, he unfortunately he was killed in an accident on his way to a football game, actually. I forgot what the year was that happened, but he was captain of the Reggae Boys.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you know, he was a native of St. Anne's. So he was mentioned.
He bears a very famous name, Maurice Cargill. Everybody knows him.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep, yep. So it's St. Elizabeth. I'm sorry. St. Anne is quite famous in a lot of ways, not just for its beauty, but and it has been written up, you know, by people going way back, as I mentioned. And it still remains a very intriguing and beautiful place. So for our listeners that have never visited Jamaica, or if you're a regular, you might want to check out, as Leigh says, some, go beyond the shores of your hotel, as long as you feel safe, and discover some of the other places in St. Anne. So with that, I want to remind our listeners again that you're listening to the Backyard Lavish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8, and for the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about the rest of our island, because we're taking a tour, one parish each week, and just give you some information about that parish that you might not have known before, whether you're a Jamaican or a foreigner just interested in culture and history. We welcome you. We ask you to come by each Wednesday and join us, and bring a friend with you the next time you come. And we're glad you're here. We hope that one of these days you'll raise your hands by hitting number one on your telephone. And we'll be glad to hear your voice. And in the meantime, do visit our website, which is www.backyardlavish.com. And become part of our community, because what we're doing is we're trying to preserve the rich culture of Jamaica as we remembered it when we were growing up. We're not.
Excuse me, do you have the telephone number handy if you don't want to use the computer?
Oh, yes. The telephone number that you would call is 718-766-4558. And, you know, you can always put us on speakerphone and go do your thing while you listen to the Lavish if you don't want to be part of the Lavish. But we all always welcome you, and we hope that you'll come back next week and join us. And in the meantime, we're going to be signing off, and we want to wish you a wonderful weekend and enjoy your city wherever you're listening from. Leigh, you want to say good night? Our loyal listener, Leigh, who is in the Bronx, home of the Yankees, he hopes your city is a winning city, too, because he rubs it in every week, because my team, I'm not even going to call their name, will go nameless until we get a win that can compete with Mr. Yankee.
We'll have a special session on that.
Right.
Okay, good night.
Okay, good night, and thank you all for listening, and we hope to see you next week. Make it a great week. Bye.